Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I am your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined, as always, by Russell Peddle. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Happy to have you back on. And we're joined by a guy making his debut, passive-aggressively tweet, and you will receive whatever you demand. Please welcome to the show, Mitch Robson. How are you, man?
Not bad, not bad. Thanks for having me on, guys. I think the Twitter shout-out there is about our James Johnson duels, but just a little bit.
Well, definitely not today, probably, because James Johnson didn't really play that much this week, but we'll get into a James Johnson thing some other day.
Eventually.
So today's episode, we're going to go back over the first week of the Raptors season, sort of look at the four games they played up until tonight's game against the Mavs. We're also going to talk a little bit about Sim Bular being traded to the Raptors 905. Not for very long, we'll just touch on it briefly. And then we'll also get to Terrence Ross's new extension with the Raptors. 3 years, $31 million officially. It came down this afternoon as the official number. So we will dive into that a little bit. And we might take some Twitter questions if there are enough out there. And we'll wrap up, as always, with our episode sponsors. So let's get to it right now. We'll take a break and we'll be back in just a second with segment one. All right, welcome back to The Headquarters. Sean Woodley with Russell Peddle and Mitch Robson. Boys, let's start with tonight's game against Dallas. The Raptors, this was a weird game. It was sort of up and down the entire way. The Raptors played well for spurts. The first quarter, they looked great. And then the second quarter, they looked just awful on both ends of the floor. And it was just sort of back and forth all night in terms of how they were playing. Kyle Lowry did his thing. He had maybe his best game of the season so far. Shot 9 of 15, had 27 points, 10 assists. He was a plus 25. He was a monster, especially in the fourth quarter. Mitch, let's start with you. What did you make of this game? And let's some general thoughts on it from you.
Okay, general thoughts. I don't know. I was sounding like you, Sean, back and forth on it. I was about to hit the panic button when we gave Charlie V that wide open dunk coming down the lane. But I guess that was kind of the wake up call for the Raps. They turned it on, went on that 20-3 run, closing it out. And even without a lot of their guys hitting shots like Patterson and Damari have been, they found a way to bring it together and pull through at the end.
For sure. Russell, I know you said you dozed off a little bit in the second half there. What did you catch from this game?
Yeah, that's basically going to be the case all season long with we still have a son that's under one. So
that's painful.
Basically always sleep deprived. My big takeaway is, you know what? The team is 4-0. And it's like different people are getting it done each game. And it reminds me a lot of, I know it's only 1 year removed, and it's a very easy comparison to make with Damari Carroll there, but it kind of reminds me of the Hawks
right.
of last year in the way that they've always, it's just different people stepping up each game, and the talent is pretty decently spread out. Like, you get good Valanciunas games, good Kyle Lowry games. Tonight we got a really good Luis Scola game.
Who saw that coming?
Yeah,
oh,
really.
Man.
That's three.
I got some thoughts.
What power forward problem? funny I'm making that comparison with the Hawks and Damari Carroll, because Damari Carroll wasn't all that great tonight. But, I mean, overall, there are a lot of positive things to take away over the first four games in general. So, yeah, there were moments tonight we were kind of like, I don't know. But, by the end of it all's well that ends well, right? And 4-0 and being the top of the Eastern Conference for now. I'm pretty happy with what I've seen so far.
Luis Scola.
I managed to stay awake for anyway.
What's that?
The parts I've managed to stay awake for.
Well. Luis Scola tonight had the old man game going amazingly. He was just schooling Dwight Powell in the first quarter, just like with like a little crafty, fake one.
That little up and under was.
Oh, the other guy owns that move. Oh.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Another thing too, Bismack Biyombo's struggles continued.
Anytime he's near the basket,
man, that guy's
your heart is in your mouth.
That guy's got concrete blocks for hands.
It's like, I mean, Terrence Ross, he didn't have a great game today. The whole bench kind of stunk today a little bit.
And there was not.
Damari Carroll had a rough game, but like, Ross, in the first quarter, he was moving the ball pretty well, and he had like a nice dump off to Biombo, and he just totally bungled it. And it was just like, God, if this guy had at least just a little bit of touch, they could have so many more easy buckets. I mean, are you guys okay with the Biombo thing? Like, are you?
Oh, I'm fine with it. I think they have enough other options that, like, nobody else really crashes the offensive boards like Biombo does. And if he can at least even make 45 to 50%, even though that's not good necessarily for right under the basket, it's solid enough.
Yeah, I think he's been really nice as like a defensive anchor for the second unit too. Mm-hmm. He seems to challenge every single thing that comes his way. He's definitely a deterrent in there. Let's go back in the week a little bit and look at some of the other games. Mitch, you and I were both at the Raptors game on Sunday against the Bucks. Russell, let's get your thoughts on that game from someone who watched it on TV. I'm just trying to remember now who really stood out. I mean, DeMar had a pretty solid game from what I remember. Damari Carroll was hitting threes again. Patrick Patterson looked really good. It was sort of a really well-balanced effort. Russell, what did you think from that game on Sunday against the Bucks?
Well, it goes back to what I was saying about, again, to make the Hawks comparison. And as you just said, it was just a spread-out effort. And, I mean, that's what's really encouraging to me this year is there's not going to be so much – it doesn't seem like there's going to be as much reliance on Kyle Lowry to carry it all, and then the games where he's not carrying it all, that DeMar DeRozan has to have a really good game or something like that. Like the balanced effort is a very positive takeaway. And you know, it was another game where Valanciunas, you know, performed well in close to 30 minutes per game, and that's one takeaway from that game and from, you know, everything apart from the second game of the season where, you know, Valanciunas has been leaned on as we were hoping he would be.
Yeah,
for sure.
The Bucks have also given up like over 110 points in their first couple games, so they're in shambles defensively. But good for JV taking advantage of that in his matchups with Monroe, who's not good defensively, and the rest of the Bucks bigs.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. They looked really good on Sunday. They were moving the ball pretty well, and they shut out Grievous. So I mean, that was a victory. So scored like 5 points, maybe.
Yeah, when I met up with Will and Harsh at halftime in that game, we were just sort of looking at each other like, maybe the Bucks aren't that good. Like, Greg Monroe just could not handle Jonas at all.
Oh, not at
like,
all.
He was getting schooled. It was brutal. And yeah, maybe the Bucks just, you know, they've sort of tampered with the defense first model they had last year. Their offense was always bad last year, but their defense could sort of make up for it this time around. If you have Grievous and Greg Monroe up there, kind of kills that. And Jabari Parker is going to come back soon. He's not a particularly good defender, so I'm worried about the Bucks a little bit.
Yeah, I still don't get the Brandon Knight trade because, I mean, yes, you gained your length and, I guess, defensive, like, you can go five positions. Anyone can guard all the positions. But they lost so much offense with Brandon Knight going out. And Carter Williams, he did make a couple threes on Sunday, but his shot's still a mess.
Well, he made the 2 threes and then he airballed the next two.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean,
everything came crashing down.
He's not exactly making huge gains in that area.
I want to ask you guys, Russell, we'll start with you. Because, I mean, tonight was a DeMar DeRozan game where it was sort of up and down the entire time. And he had some possessions, especially at the end of the first half, where it was just like classic DeMar, except it ended a lot more terribly than it normally does. It was just he went for the step back to end the quarter and he got it like slapped away and it was really ugly. I had that happen a few times actually. It was just sort of, you know, the kind of DeMar DeRozan stuff that makes Harsh hate him.
And, for good reason.
And so Russell, I just want to start with you and ask, like, what have you made of DeMar's performance this week? Because for me, looking at him, like, yes, it's easy to rip apart his game, but I feel like he's actually been pretty good. I really, really enjoy his driving kick game. He sort of has added to that from what he showed at the end of last season. What do you make of DeMar so far?
Well, I mean, I'm back and forth on this, and I have been throughout the first four games, where you could recognize that he's contributing positively to the team in the sense that, I mean, he's scoring 21 points a night. He's thrown in 4.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds, essentially. Like, you look at the box score and you're like, okay, DeMar DeRozan is making a positive impact on this team. But, you know, he's still not shooting well from beyond the arc. His shooting percentage is good, not great. And it's just, you know, some of the shots are maddening. Like, and I'm worried that as a fan base and I mean, I think it's funny because I wrote a something I wrote the other day to, in a preview talking about DeMar and mentioning how, you know, he need if he's going to buy into the team concept and like kind of get away from being so ISO heavy, he's still we as a site, specifically the writers, like when you talk about Harsh and whoever else, like we pile on DeMar, and it's kind of like it's warranted in the sense that you feel it sometimes. Like if you're watching a game and you feel like the ball is moving and you're excited with what Kyle Lowry's doing, it's easy to get a little bit frustrated with DeMar sometimes when when he's forcing it on offense. And unfortunately, those are the things that are sticking out in my mind when I see him play. Even though when I look at, like I said, when I look at the box score and say, okay, DeMar contributed positively, and you can think of specific plays when he did as well. But it just always, it struck me consistently whenever he would like, you know, over dribble or you know, take a very poor contested shot or something like that. So, you know, what I make of him after a few games is I'm still struggling with the idea of him as a max player for that reason.
Mitch?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, like, I think while you're watching DeRozan every day, like we do, the valleys of watching him when he's down and he's missing shots and losing the ball when he's trying to post up on his ISOs are much lower than the peaks of when he's making those mid-range jump shots. Because as an educated basketball fan, we're all trying to move away from the mid-range jumper, right? So, I mean, as you're watching that, it can get frustrating when he's blowing possessions, when there's guys around him that are open, that have been feeling it, that have been making shots. And he's not really adding anything else to the game defensively. So, I mean, that kind of frustrates you too.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I feel like we're getting dangerously close to like undervaluing him a little bit. Like, I know Harsh was sort of tongue in cheek tonight with all of his tweets about like I don't know, just the basketball to
The
difficult and
trash
all
to
that stuff.
basketball player.
Yeah, just like, and I mean, I do agree to an extent. Like, I don't think he's a max player, and I don't know. I feel like there's been rumblings that there's sort of a mutual agreement between the two that he's probably not a max player, but we'll get to that at some point down the road, I suppose. But I mean, he's still a very good player, and his driving kick game is really solid. His post-up game is pretty solid as well. We can take younger, smaller guys into the post with ease. And you know what? He's an adequate defender. If he's your second or third best wing defender, now that DeMarre Carroll's there, that's totally fine. You know, he does hit those shots that can sort of turn things around, even though it looks like it's going to be terrible. And then he hits that, you know, baseline fadeaway, and it hits, and things sort of turn around. And not many guys can make that shot. It's a shot that he's pretty good at, considering everything. And not many guys can make that shot at all. So I worry that we're going to get too close to undervaluing DeRozan and sort of, you know, shitting on him too much. But I mean, I do see where everybody's coming from with it.
And I think like casual fans have a much more, I don't know if it's like a middling opinion on him than we do as the people that watch the team every day and just get frustrated.
For sure. Let's just go around a couple more things. So first off, any areas of concern over the first four games? Russell, let's start with you.
Well, like I said, the moments when they get away from the team concept and ball movement, I think that's something that the team plays well when it's moving the ball around. And like I know that sounds overly simplistic because every team really, but teams get away from that, right? And when you kind of take that Spursian approach to the game, just good things happen. We talk about like when Terrence Ross felt like he was making a positive impact tonight, it was when he was moving the ball. So I think just last year after watching it stick so much, I don't want to see that this year. So when that happens, those are the things that you know, give me a cause for concern. Until tonight, I was very concerned about the power forward position, but now Luis Scola is obviously the answer there. So, no, honestly, I think that the team looks well balanced in the sense that, you know, people are trading off production, and you know, the team's 4-0, so and it's against teams that no teams that are, that were necessarily pushovers. Like all teams that, well, I mean, the Mavericks don't have that great a team this year. Like that we have to admit, but still, it's like when you're a road game against the Western Conference, and a team with some experience with experienced players is still nothing to shake off. So honestly, overall, most of my takeaways are positive.
Mitch?
Yeah, I mean, I'd go the same way, especially with the wins over the Pacers, the Celtics, and the Bucks. A bunch of NBA people and Twitter people in preseason saying those are the three teams to watch to make a leap. And then a lot were critical of the Raptors saying we were going to fall down or fall out. So, I mean, beating them is at least a nice statement to start the year. In terms of concerns, maybe going forward, JV did play a lot in the fourth quarter tonight. He's played in the fourth quarters when it's been close in the first four games. But hopefully if things start like evening out and the team loses a couple, Casey doesn't go back to his old ways of yanking him and letting him sit on the bench while he could be out there trying to develop and get in playing time in clutch situations.
For sure.
Well, as of right now, sorry, to that point, over four games, the JV is third on the team in fourth quarter minutes with 7.1.
Which is great.
Per game, behind DeMar and Corey Joseph, funny enough.
And what, didn't he have the best like on-off defensive split as well? I think I saw that stat earlier on today before this game. So it's promising for sure. If there's an area of concern for me, it might be the depth. Like Norman Powell coming into the game in the first quarter because DeRozan got into foul trouble is a little bit concerning to me. Like
that's where James Johnson would have just been great.
Here we go.
I like Norman Powell. I think he's got some potential, but I also don't think he's a regular rotation player just yet. I think we got to pump the brakes on that a little bit, but that's a little concerning to me. And yeah, James Johnson is a thing, I suppose, but he also can't shoot. So, whatever you want. That'd be the area of concern for me. And even like with the power forward spot, once you get past Patterson and Scola, like you're getting into Anthony Bennett territory. And like if Patterson's shot isn't falling, like it's fallen until tonight. This is the first night he's really struggled. Yeah. But, you know, that's something to watch if there's because injuries happen. And if we're relying on, you know, Anthony Bennett and Norman Powell and God forbid Bruno to actually play minutes in a crucial spot, I think there could be some issues there. But for right now,
it's all good.
The team looks pretty solid. Yeah, it's all good. Let's just touch on one more thing before we end this segment. We'll get to Terrence Ross talk. I just want to touch on the Sim Bular thing. Harsh, I thought, was going to cry the night that it happened. He was pretty excited. I don't think it's that big a deal, really. I think it's nice to have a big – I saw someone talk about this. I think it's nice to have a big lumbering sort of center who can sort of take up the JV role if they're really trying to incorporate the same system with the 905 as they are in the Raptors.
Right.
Other than that, like, it's cool. A little bit of Canadian content never hurt, I suppose. Anyone have any lukewarm takes on Sim Bular? Mitch?
I don't know if I go lukewarm. I mean, they did trade Ricky Lito for him, who is an interesting prospect scoring-wise to come off the bench and fill it up. But, I mean, it's D-League trade, so I can't really complain about it.
Russell, anything?
It's a D-League trade. There isn't a whole lot to get too excited about. I mean, I guess he did lead the NBA in PER last year, but
I saw that.
obviously very limited, small sample size. But
Bular's frustrating because like he's obviously like nowhere near in shape enough to be an NBA center. But like he's such a load in terms of blocking shots and just taking up space that like I feel like if he could slim down a little bit, like maybe there's a potential for him for like a few minutes off the bench here and there. I don't know.
He's just a big basketball player.
He's a huge human being.
I remember a couple of years ago when I was out at Summer League, I walked past him in the tunnel, and he is just, it's insane.
Yeah,
how large he is.
Yeah, he's enormous. I ran into Bebe at Raptors Media Day, and I was like in awe of how big that guy is. And Sim is like 3 inches taller and
twice
like
the size of him, yeah.
Yeah, he's like two Bebes wide. All right, boys, we will wrap it there. We will get back with our second segment in just a second. We're going to talk about the Terrence Ross extension. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley with Russell Peddle and Mitch Robson. We're going to talk about the Terrence Ross extension. The news came down, obviously, last night before the deadline for third-year players to get extended. And, you know, the final number came down today. It looks like it's 3 years, $31 million for Terrence Ross. So I guess it comes down to this. Russell, we'll start with you. Are you cool with the number for Terrence Ross at 3 years, $31 million?
Yes, I am. Like at first glance, 11 an annual average annual salary of 11 million is not that bad in today's NBA for the type of player that he is and someone with upside. Like I know we're always looking for that that upside to be realized, but truthfully, he's obviously not being paid for what he's done. And that's people will want to react that way and be like, oh, he's not worth that much. But you got to keep in mind that that there's still room to grow here. And we have to think back to like when DeMar DeRozan got his deal, there was this idea of like, oh, that much for DeMar DeRozan. But it worked out that now it's a very team friendly contract. Given the fact that he is an all-star and he is a 20 point per game scorer and we're back to that point again now where we're going like, really, that much for DeMar DeRozan? But the point being that these deals end up looking good. Like you look at the Kyle Lowry deal, you look at the Valanciunas deal in a couple of years. These are not back-breaking contracts that are going to keep you from being able to add other pieces, especially with the cap going up, the TV deal and all that stuff. So overall, for what it is, for who Ross is, and even if he only ends up being this scorer off the bench, that's not a bad number for him.
Mitch, where are you on it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much with Russell there. Last night, initially, I screamed a little bit, but to see the 3 for 31. But if you think about it, with the cap going up, he's only going to take up about 10% when that last year kicks in, when the cap's up in triple digits. And if he keeps playing this year, even for like an extended period of 10 to 20 more games, I think I'll be fully in on him. It's just going to take a little bit from last year to finally get to a point where I'm comfortable with him all the time, like I was back in the 13-14 season when he was making corner threes at like a 40% rate and defending the other team's best player. Got away from that last year, but I think if he can at least come off the bench and defend the other team's best player for 15, 20 minutes a night, hit a couple threes, then I'm good with that number.
Yeah, I'm good with it too. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, obviously it's a risk because you run the risk of him, you know, either regressing again like he did last year in comparison to his second season and just sort of, you know, relaxing now that he's one known to relax. So, I mean,
yeah,
he's you run the risk of him relaxing now that he's got some security and not really living up to his potential, which we know he has. Like, it's there. He's so talented. He's got all the tools you need. But even if he, you know, never gets to that level, I think the role he's in right now is sort of the sixth man off the bench, where he's sort of the offensive, you know, go-to guy if you're not counting Corey Joseph on the bench. I think it's perfect for him. He's not guarding, you know, starting threes anymore. He's up against second unit twos, mm-hmm. and I think that's a big deal because I think that's where his athleticism can sort of, he can sort of ride on that a little bit. He doesn't have to be, he doesn't get overpowered when
he's able to facilitate and get in the lane and like,
that too, like we saw
that
tonight. He can
do that so well when he actually puts his mind to it and wants to do it.
For sure, we saw that tonight. Like it was, he's a very smart player when he wants to be. He's a very good passer when he wants to be. He can do all these things when he wants to. That's why he's so frustrating. But I think it's smart to lock him in at that kind of money. I mean, that's money you can more than be happy. You can be more than happy paying a guy on your bench that kind of money if he's going to be, you know, a regular contributor off the bench. And like, as you said, the cap isn't just going up next year. It's going up the year after that as well. And it's going to be, you know, triple digits, $110 million is sort of the estimate. But I mean, this year's estimate ended up being lower than what it ended up being. And it's, who knows what it's actually going to be. And it's only going to be a team friendly deal, I think, as long as he stays on this track. And I mean, there's always the chance that he figures it out and becomes something even more. And we've seen it this year where he, I mean, it's four games, obviously, but we've seen that he can be a really, really electric player off the bench. And if that's what he ends up being as an eighth overall pick, that's totally cool. And it's better than losing him for nothing. And the other thing, too, is, you know, if he does have a year where, you know, in the contract year he plays his ass off and you want to keep him, you know, if he goes to restricted free agency with next year with the cap climate the way it's going to be, there are going to be teams who overpay him. There's going to be, you know, a Utah who's, you know, starving for three-point shooting and has to get to the cap floor, let alone
Memphis or somebody like that. Who needs
they're going to throw around a crazy amount of money for a guy like Terrence Ross if they miss out on some of the top guys on the market. So, like,
we're absolutely going to see that. Like, a lot of guys who are kind of like quote unquote betting on themselves, not getting an extension figured out and going into restricted free agency. Like, there's going to be an arms race for people with new money, with the new money that all these teams have, and they're going to just, you know, I think teams getting their players locked up like Ross in this instance are going to benefit greatly from that.
And teams are going to have to get to the floor, like I said. Like, teams are going to be forced to spend crazy money. Like, how much money do you think a guy like Andre Drummond is going to get offered in restricted free agency?
Oh, my God, Andre.
It's going to be absurd.
Average these first four games?
Yeah, it's going to be
behind Terrence Ross.
we had JV. It made sense not to draft him.
Totally. That's the thing. In that draft, like, you look after, you know, Drummond. Drummond's the only what if guy in that draft after Terrence Ross. Like, it's not a very deep draft. So, like, I don't know. I'm totally cool with the number for Terrence Ross. I mean, it'd be nice if he, you know, if he figured it out and found some consistency and actually sort of gave a shit. But, you know, if not, he's locked up at a reasonable number for a guy off the bench who can be electric. And that's all you can really ask for. Couple more things we should get to. Let's just look ahead at the schedule for the rest of this week. So first up, they got the Oklahoma City Thunder tomorrow. Russell, I know you'll be watching this one intently unless you're napping.
That'll be fun.
What are you expecting from tomorrow's game, Russell?
I'm expecting the first real big challenge that the team has faced. It's really going to test this whole, being top of the league right now. There are three undefeated teams in the league, the Los Angeles Clippers and the Golden State Warriors and the Toronto Raptors. And many people will say, one of these things is not like the other. So it'll be interesting to see if they're up to that challenge, because obviously the Thunder have two of the probably the five best players in the league. They're a team that looks every bit a championship contender this year. So if they can hang with them, especially on the road, like during this big stretch of road games, I think I think this is going to be the moment. Like, obviously it's only a week and there are all those caveats of it being a small sample size and all that stuff. But I think if they come out tomorrow and are at least competitive, you're going to get people even at, like, outside of Raptors circles kind of going like, "Huh, the Raptors, huh?" Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a fun game for that reason. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm still so thrown off by Matt Moore being the only person who's in on the Raptors this year. It's kind of awesome.
It is fun.
Yeah. Mitch, what are you expecting from tomorrow?
Tomorrow, I think, against the Thunder, the second unit has to show up because, as we all know, the OKC bench isn't that deep. Technically, our bench would be, I guess, looked upon better. So if they can come out and rebound from tonight's rough shooting performance and our second unit can outplay their second unit, I definitely think there's a chance for a win.
See, I don't know if I agree.
I disagree with that. I think
their bench is pretty awesome. I think they're probably the deepest team, maybe except for Houston in the league. They're those moves they made last year at the deadline are sort of underrated. And, like, Enes Kanter, sure, he sucks defensively, but if he's the go-to guy in their second unit, that's pretty terrifying, especially if you have, like,
Augustine as well.
Yeah, and if they're going to have, like, Patrick Patterson guarding Enes Kanter, good the hell luck. That's going to be terrible. I think this will probably be their first loss of the year, but the Raptors are always good for, like, two or three games against a Western giant where they totally just play their asses off and either win or keep it super close. I'm not sure if it'll be tomorrow, but, you know, second game of back-to-back, I'm kind of expecting them to lose pretty handily, but you know what? The Raptors are pretty interesting. I want to ask, before we get to the rest of the games this week, like, Russell, we'll start with you. Has this week changed your opinion at all on where the Raptors sit in the East? I think most of us sort of had them in that 4, 5, 6 range, sort of below the Hawks, the Wizards, and the Bulls. Has this week changed your thinking, whether it's with the Raptors and how they've played or other teams in the East and how they've played?
I'm glad you asked. I'm on record on Twitter. I guess we can call that being on record. with my kind of just throwing out like my season predictions just before the season started. And I had Raptors second in the East. And, you know, John Godas, our own John Godas, was like, gave a bit of a whoa. And I got a, you know, a
couple flyer emojis, maybe.
Yeah, I got a couple accusations of being a homer and all this stuff. But in all honesty, the Raptors have been a good, like, overall have been a good regular season team the last couple of years. Obviously there were deficiencies and problems and bad stretches, but overall they were a pretty good team. And I really stand behind the moves that were made this summer, and I really think they were good moves. And while there are still, you know, there's an issue at the four, and they're like, as you mentioned earlier, there might be a depth issue if injuries start coming into play. But overall, I believe in the team, and I've been projecting them and honestly believing that they could be the 2 seed. And I don't say that meaning that I think that they're the second best team in the East. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I think that the Bulls are better on paper when all healthy, but that's it. There's just too many question marks, and like, things never go completely right for the Bulls. It's been years of that not happening. Like, you know, even the Cavs with LeBron's back and their injury problems and with Kyrie out, like, it's not even a given that they'll get the most wins in the Eastern Conference during the regular season. Like, I think people are afraid to say that, but like, let's be honest, there are a lot of factors at play there. So, you know, as far as regular season wins go, I mean, they could still, you know, flame out in the first round for the third straight year. But as far as regular season wins go, I've been saying that they'll finish second, and even people who, because people were so high on like, oh, the Bucks are really going to break out, oh, the Celtics are really going to break out, the Wizards are going to be really good and all this stuff. And it's just like, we haven't really seen any of those things happen. And then even you watch the Bulls tonight and how they were creamed by the Charlotte Hornets of all teams. You know, there are people, the Eastern Conference teams aren't as good as everyone thinks they are. Is everyone like going into this season where you know just kind of got really high on teams like the Celtics and stuff like that, and maybe it was a little preemptive. So honestly, I think if anything, I just feel justified, I guess, or I feel validated. Like, I don't think my pick of them for the 2 seed is that crazy. And I think, you know, if they can keep this up over the next little while, obviously the schedule is going to get harder, and this road trip is going to tell us a lot about the team and its ceiling. But you know, I stand behind what I said before, and so it hasn't changed. So that's coming from my perspective as someone who is definitely one of the people that's projecting them the highest. Like, you talk about Matt Moore kind of being on Raptors Island now, which is funny. I'm there as well, and I don't like it being diminished as like a homer pick. Like, I'm someone who would say that the Raptors are going to be bad if they're going to be bad. You know what I mean? Like, just because I follow the team and I've been a fan for 20 years doesn't mean that I'm going to just always be like, oh yeah, the Raptors are the best team in the league. Like, I'm also a basketball analyst, so to speak. So, you know, I say that. Anyway, I'm rambling on. I've made my point. Take this away from me now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it would necessarily say the four games have changed my thoughts, because I didn't really know where they were going to be. I mean, there were a ton of people that thought they could finish top 2, 3 in the East. Like, Ethan Strauss, the Warriors beat guy that I love, said he wanted to pick the Raptors to finish first, but didn't want to get mocked and shredded for that. And there were a bunch of clowns on ESPN that said they were going to be the 11th seed or the 12th seed. So
everyone just kind of... I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, that was insane. Anyways, there was just a lot of differing opinions and conflicting opinions. I don't know if people thought that they were going to completely lose any ability to score with Lou and Grievous gone, just from people that casually watched the team and saw them put up all those shots, and if the new additions would be able to fit right in. But, I mean, they've gotten back to the defense. I mean, they held Dallas to, what, 89 tonight? So if they can keep teams under 100 points consistently, that gives you a good chance to win every night, and you can definitely finish top three in the East doing that.
For sure. I think my thoughts on the ceiling for them have sort of changed just because of sort of what Russell was getting at, is that in that, like, I'm not sure the Eastern Conference teams are all that great. Like, Chicago's defense might be terrible. Like, they give up 130 points to the Hornets tonight. Like, that is just, you can't do that.
Dreadful.
I'm not sure I like the whole starting Mirotić next to Gasol thing, but that's a different podcast. And like, the Hawks are interesting to me because I've watched a few of their games, and while they're still really good and the ball movement is great, they seem to be missing just like sort of a little bit of the cadence they had last year, if that makes any sense at all.
It does.
Yeah.
Like,
they don't, it's like, you know, you're watching them and you know you're watching the Hawks, but it does not feel like the Hawks.
Yeah, like Kyle Korver hasn't shot well so far. That'll probably change, but I was also sort of worried about him. I was worried about the Hawks because I felt like a lot of what they were built on last year was, you know, Kyle Korver had a ridiculous, like, historically great three-point shooting season, and like, are you expecting him to repeat a career best season like when he's, you know, in his mid-30s and he's coming off shoulder surgery? I don't know if you can totally rely on that. And I love Dennis Schroeder because I think he's got like all the talent in the world, but I'm not sure he really fits into what the Hawks try to do because he loves the ball in his hands, and like, he's not the most willing passer. He takes a lot of weird, like, you know,
running,
you know, kind of DeMar DeRozan-y, you know, stupid mid-range jumpers. Not as, you know, difficult, but just like, you know, shots that don't really fit into the Hawks system. Like, I think they're still really good. I think they're probably going to be a top three seed, but there's something not totally clicking with them right now. It probably will start clicking at some point. They weren't really great out of the gate last year either, but that's something to keep an eye on.
I can add one more thing. I just think that one thing we have to look at, if you want to look at where the team is, like a couple years ago, they were like top 10. The Raptors were a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like one of those things that as much as people were like, oh, are the Raptors for real? Like, what can we take away from this? When a team places in the top 10 and the efficiency of both those categories, like, that's a pretty good sign that it's a good team. Like, you can say that pretty safely. And last year, of course, the defensive rating just fell out entirely, and they were like a bottom third defensive team, but were like a top three offensive team. Now, this season, we talked about a lot in the preseason, and when trying to project the team, we were saying that if they kind of bring those numbers closer together, then that's a really good sign. And if anything, like with the changes they made, if they're going to be a more defensive-minded team, like for a team to be successful and to have success in the playoffs especially, which is, you know, ultimately what we want, like, we can get a 50-win season, but if we don't win in the first, if the Raptors don't win in the first round, people are, like, going to be calling for people's heads. So I think what's very encouraging is to start this season, and what makes, you know, going forward, what we can really hope something good will come out of this is the fact that the Raptors are a top five defensive team start the season. I know it's a small sample size, but, you know, you up there with them are the Jazz, Warriors, Spurs, and Cavs, teams that, you know, that being a top five defensive team will likely stick for them. So it's one of those things where you kind of, you have that hope, and then they're still a top 10 offensive team borderline, though, like in ninth at the very moment while we're recording this. So it's one of those things where, okay, maybe the defensive part is going to, that part of the identity is going to be the leading factor, which is really what you'd want it to be, and then the offense will kind of figure itself out.
Yeah, and it's only four games, but like, the teams they played, other than the Bucks, which are sort of a pushover offensively, like, the Celtics were a pretty solid offense last year. The Pacers play a lot faster and smaller now. They look pretty good on offense so far. And, you know, Dallas, as much as they're messed up, they can still play offense pretty well as well. So, like, it's, and I mean, it's not the toughest competition they've played, but it's also not just a super cream puff schedule that the defense has done well against. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's a positive. All right, let's wrap this up. Let's get to a quick break. And on the other side, we will get to our very special episode sponsor for this week. All All right, welcome back to the final segment of the headquarters. As always, in our final segment, we will bring to you our episode sponsor of the week. And it's a special one today because if you didn't know, November 4th, the day we're recording, or now it's November. Oh, no, wait, November 3rd, the day we were recording, and now it's turned over to the 4th, was the anniversary, the 20th anniversary of the Raptors' first ever game. So this week, our episode sponsor is none other than 1995-96 NBA Rookie of the Year, Damon Stoudemire. So his Raptors career, quickly, he had 200 games played even, 17.2 points, 7.7 assists, 3.6 rebounds. Those were the best numbers he ever put up in his career, which is kind of crazy because he was 24 when he got traded to Portland. Russell, let's start with you because you were alive when this happened. I was, you know, I was like 3 years old and noted young person Mitch wasn't even born yet. So
yeah.
Do you have any recollection of this very first Raptors season and Damon Stoudemire's time here?
You guys are so young. it's adorable. I love being the resident old guy.
Tell us, Russell.
Old man radio. Like,
yeah, hold on now. Let me, okay. Yeah, no, I remember Damon Stoudemire because I was a big basketball fan in a country full of hockey fans. Like, even a town, like, surrounded by people who didn't care about basketball in the slightest. And I was, like, a huge Sonics fan, like you alluded to earlier about my connection to the Thunder. So when Toronto and Vancouver, poor one out, by the way, got teams, it was a very exciting time. So I immediately latched onto the Raptors. And so Damon Stoudemire, to me, represented the first Raptor that I really cared about and rooted for, you know? Like, excuse me.
We can edit that.
Thank you. Okay, let me start another thought here and make it easy for you. Okay, let me just get a drink of water real quick. I'm still getting over a cold, and this time of night it really takes hold of me again.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
Okay. I mean, you look at the red, purple dino jerseys and how they're such a popular retro item now, and a big part of that was Damon Stoudemire. It was getting that Damon Stoudemire number 20 purple dino jersey was such a hot item, and he was just so fun to root for, like, you know, rookie of the year in our inaugural season. Like, that's pretty cool, you know. And to be basically a 20-10 guy, like, he went, like, he spent the majority of his career in Portland, but he really is going to be remembered as a Raptor. He only had 2.5 seasons there in Toronto. Mm-hmm. But it was something else. He was fun. He was exciting to root for. And it was one of those things where, as I said, coming from a hockey, we were a hockey country, and, you know, obviously baseball was still pretty hot then and stuff like that, but it was cool to have your standard sports fan, even if they weren't a basketball fan, like, know who Damon Stoudemire was and to talk about him. Like, that was cool.
I'm curious what the impression of the jerseys was when they came out. Like, was it just sort of like, oh yeah, it's the 90s, these are what jerseys look like, or was there outrage, or what was the deal there?
I think there was a bit of a divide, I guess, because I don't know if everyone was completely on board with the Raptor and the name or the logo or anything at the time, but the jerseys, like, no one really noticed because everything was super cartoony, like the Bucks and the Hawks and you know, so the
Rockets. Yeah.
Mitch, excuse me.
Mitch, do you have any? I guess unless you've gone back and listened to some or watched some YouTube games of Stoudemire. I don't know.
They had the first game on against the Nets on NBA TV Canada today. I did watch that. That was entertaining.
You're gonna kill our next our contest.
Oh, am I?
A few episodes ago, we played with an impromptu game of guess who played on this random day in Raptors history with Russell, and I think we're gonna do the same with the 95-96 season. Although I'm not gonna
be successful with this.
I'm not gonna pick the opener because that's too easy now because Mitch watched earlier today.
Let's go.
So let's go somewhere.
You're just gonna pick a random game?
Yes, please.
Let's see here. How about we go Sunday, March 24th, 1996, where they beat the Chicago Bulls.
So it was like 6 months
109,
old.
108. I guess this is the game that they always, you know, have audio clips of on certain things when they beat the Bulls in that game. So, yeah, the starting lineup is very different than what only seven players played in this game. Wow.
Only okay. Seven Raptors made it into the
seven
game?
Seven Raptors. Okay. Yeah, seven Raptors. One Raptor who started the season with the Raptors ended up on the Bulls, John Sally. He's no longer with the team, obviously, at this time.
Okay.
This game brought the Raptors to 18-49 in their inaugural season. I will be really impressed if you guys can name.
This is easy. I thought you were going to pick something harder than this. Of course, I remember this one. This was such a huge win in the inaugural season. Like, I could probably rhyme.
But you remember all seven players?
I bet you I can come up with them. Yeah.
All right, let's go. Let's both of you. Let's just go name for name.
I'll give you a head start here, Mitch. I bet you I can get the rest.
All right. Ed Pickney.
No. No. These are all fairly. I'd say they're. If I'm trying to think now, I'm being super cocky, but if I really had to think about it, I think that these are pretty much names, like recognizable, like Raptors names, not like really
Doug Christie and those kind of
Doug. Doug Christie would have definitely been one of them.
Yep, he's one.
Obviously, Stoudemire. That's two.
Yeah, so there's five left.
I remember distinctly Oliver Miller being in that game.
Big name.
Yep.
I would say the Tracy Murray, Carlos Rogers combos in there.
You are correct. Tracy Murray played 47 minutes in that game.
He was.
Wow.
So you're missing one starter and one guy off the bench.
Mitch, do you want to have a go at this before I round this up?
Let's think for a second. Would it have been? Was Jimmy King still getting minutes?
He was not.
Fab Five let me down. All right, go ahead, Russ. Finish it off.
Alvin Robertson would have been a starter then.
Yep, he was a starter. He only scored 2 points in 29 minutes.
Two in that game.
Yep.
I watched this game several times, like on the repeats on on NBA TV Canada. So
he was the low scorer on the Raptors that day.
Wow.
Second lowest scorer is the guy you have not gotten yet.
It has to be Tabac.
Yep. Zantovic. Oh.
All right. That's impressive. There's only seven guys. I maybe would have gotten three.
That was, you could have picked the game before or the game after, and I might have struggled a bit more. But like I said, I've just watched that game so many times because it's a classic.
Mm-hmm. I'm not really, I don't know. I guess I'm not really a great Raptors historian. Like, it's not really. Like, I'm not very good at that stuff. Like, even when I was going back the last time we played, and, like, Lauren Woods was a guy.
Oh, I was
guy.
About I was
like,
to bring up Lauren Woods. I was just going to say. Legend of sub. Him and Maceo Bastin are the names out of my childhood.
God, this segment is so depressing every single week.
That's not a depressing one. That was a pretty good, given the fact that.
Actually, no. That was
an expansion team, mostly made up of expansion draft picks. Really, our first actual shot at a draft pick before years and years of terrible draft picks. You know, it's a. Now, given I'm plugging like Oliver Miller as a good thing, but
they beat the best team of all time.
And that's exactly it. And that's the takeaway from this whole thing. And that's why, you know, this was easy to remember because that's just as far as. 20 years of sadness. That's one of the really like the purely happy moments I had as a 11-year-old.
All right, boys, this has been a good episode. We need to get to sleep. I'm sure I got to edit this before I sleep. So
good for you, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And for the listeners, I sneezed and coughed a lot because I've got a bit of a cold. So I really put Sean to work on this one.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining me today. Mitch, solid podcast debut.
Thank you for having me on.
Better than James Johnson would have done.
Wow.
Without a doubt.
I doubt that. That man is the greatest human alive. So.
Yeah, he's, you know, got great hairstyles. So, All right. Thank you so much for listening to The Headquarters. As always, you can follow the show or follow Raptors HQ at Raptors HQ. You can follow me at Woodley Sean. Mitch is at underscore Mitch Robson.
Correct. Is that the deal? I make frequent changes, but that one's staying for a while. So.
All right. We've got at Rusty Pedal Bike as well. Please be sure to subscribe, join the three people who have actually reviewed us on iTunes, and give us a little rating and all that fun stuff. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with another episode next week.